All right, so we are holding 12 Roman Aleph, second line from the bottom. Okay. Yesterday we said that Rav Huna had said that this was saying that you have the case where Nida is Tomim Sufik Mesles for 24 up to 24 hours before they actually saw the blood. So Rav Huna had said that that only applies to Kodesh but not to Truma. So if she had handled Truma during the 24 hours, then nothing happens. The Truma is still Tomim. But only if she had handled food of Kodshim, then yeah. Okay, so I'm going to say Toshma. Come, let's bring a proof from a Braita as follows. Maisiv Oster Rebbe Kirab Eliezer. It happened once that Rebbe decided a case in Halacha like Rebbe Eliezer. We're going to have in the next Mishnah that Rebbe Eliezer holds like this. You have like this. You have a case in the Mishnah that you have the four women we said over there that are Gaya Shaita, that we said everybody agrees are Gaya Shaita, because the Chazaka is they're no longer menstruating at this point. One of them was a Kena, an old woman. And so we said, remember, we didn't say it yet, but we're going to say in the next Mishnah, the definition of an old woman for that purpose is we're three regular cycles have passed, we'll say 3 months, and she hasn't had any bleeding. At that point, we can assume she's menopausal already. Now, Rebbe Eliezer says there that it's not only if she's a skein, and not only if she's already old, if she's already 40 or 50 years old and then misses 3 periods, any time during her life that she, even if she's a younger woman, and she misses 3 periods in a row, then Rebbe Eliezer says, Daya Shaita, we consider as if she's already hit menopause, or as if she's, whatever, as if it's no longer a chazaka that she's going to have re'ias, and therefore that there should be an issue. The Chachamim again disagree. So it happened once. Now the halacha usually when you have Rebbe Eliezer against the Chachamim, usually the halachas are going to be like the Chachamim. But it happened once that Rebbe passed in like Rebbe Eliezer, la'achashin nizkar, after he remembered and realized that wasn't really the right thing to do, and we'll see on the base what exactly he realized. Omar, Rebbe said, oh well, kedai hu, Rebbe Eliezer lismach ala b'shatat chas. Rebbe Eliezer is strong enough, he's worthy enough that we should rely on him b'shatat chas. What's the shatat chas? So Rashi explains the situation was it was during a drought. So therefore, like this, what's going to happen? If we're going to say, like a chachamim, that we say mesles, it means 24 hours worth of taharas or truma, that's what we're going to talk about over here, that she'd been working with during the previous day are going to be tumim and stuff. It's going to be a huge amount of food that's lost, and in a time of drought, you can't really do that. So therefore, that's the shatat chas. Tosfos disagrees with that. Because you have a topic. Well, that's we're going to ask whether we're talking about Truma or Kodshim over here, but let's say, okay, even if we go according to the Huna that we're talking about Kodshim, fine, the point is you have 24 hours worth of food of Kodshim. Yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because the Gemara explains later that actually the Chachamim would agree that if it was a time of drought like that, then yes, we can be made. So therefore, over here, if we're saying that Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim still disagree, and Rebbe is saying, really, I should have passed on the Chachamim, but oh well, I passed on the Rebbe Eliezer, it's fine, he's worthy to rely on the Shatat Chas. Tosfos says the Shatat Chas must be something else. So Tosfos, again, because the Gemara says over there, later on, we're going to learn on Testament base, the Chachamim agree that if it's in a time of drought, then you can be makel. You don't have it, you don't agree. Yeah, it's right. So therefore, so Tosfos explains the situation was over here that, And the situation was over here that Tosfos has two possibilities. Either that, let's say for example, before the Re'iyah, she had prepared a little bit of Taharas food. Fine, that wouldn't be a Shatat Chas so much. Then after Rebbe Paskin, she said, okay, well then if I'm Tahar, then I might as well go and work with a lot of Taharas. And now you have a large amount of food that's going to be lost. Tosfos says another possibility might be just that after she asked the Shiloh, whoever it was, asked the Shiloh on her behalf or whatever, then the person left, and now it would be a real hassle to go and find them. It's not like, you know, you can't just call them up, right? So, yeah. Either way, so that's the Shatat Chas. Well, yeah, we're talking about in those days. So he says it's okay to rely on him, Shatat Chas. The Rishonim and the Achronim have a lot of discussion. In what cases do we say that you can rely on something b'shatat chas? It does, you know, here we're saying it's a yochid versus a rabbin, you know, usually the halacha is like a rabbin. Does it only apply to a machlokes tanoim? Does it maybe also apply to a machlokes between rishonim and achronim, for example? Do we say, you know, what about, for example, in this case, the machlokes between Rebbe Eliezer and the chachamim is not about a shatat chas, it's primarily about normal situations, and then you have, you know, as an outgrowth of it, there can be a case of shatat chas, a case of hex and merubah like this. But what about when when, for example, when the machlokas to begin with is exactly on a case of shachas chak, then you can't say kedai hu lus machalav shachas chak, because then the whole machlokas is on that. Okay, anyway. So the question is the habinim law. Now, in the Gemara later on, when we mention this, we discuss my la'achash nizko. What do we mean after Rebbe remembered? What did he remember that he should have done differently? This is a side thing. This is before we get back to the matter of whether this is truma or kodshim over here. Does it mean that he remembered that actually the halacha has officially been passed in, not like Rabbi Yezer, but rather like the Rabbanon? Well, if that were the case, if you remember that, then how can you say, okay, but if the Shasat Chak were able to pass in like Rabbi Yezer, the point is, in other words, again, Tosfos is saying they agree in the Shasat Chak. The point is, in other words, that if the halacha had actually been formally passed in, like the Chachamim, they're learning also, relax. Okay, but they're learning and we're learning, whatever. We can also, whatever, it's fine. They were actually in this room before. Anyway, just focus, you know, that's how it is in a business. Okay. Anyway, if the halacha had formally been passed back like the Chachamim, not like Rabbi Eliezer, then you can't say the Shas and Chak, you can pass them like Rabbi Eliezer. Because you can't, once the halacha has been passed. Because once the halacha has been passed in a certain way, then that's that. Once the halacha has been passed in, that would be like saying, for example, you know, think of it in modern terms, let's say, for example, it's accepted that pretty much all the poskim have agreed that electricity is also on Shabbos. So you're going to say the Shabbos fact were able to rely on the opinions that say that electricity is also on Shabbos? No, if it's a Pekorach Nefesh, we're not talking about it. Shabbos fact is not as much as Pekorach Nefesh. Pekorach Nefesh, never mind. We're talking about Shabbos fact. We're talking about, let's say, for example, a person is saying, you know, if I can't use electricity on Shabbos, I stand to lose $100,000. That's not reason enough to say you're allowed to use electricity on Shabbos. It's been passed in that not. Now, El Olav, so it must be what Rebbe remembered, Deloy Itmar Hilchas Aloy Kemar Veloy Kemar, it must be that Rebbe remembered that actually the halacha has not yet been passed in like either opinion. The question is still open. The Kivin Shenizker to Lav Yochad Polig Ale El Rabbin Pligim Ale. But it's not that Rebbe remembered what the halacha is, because the fact is the halacha has not yet been decided, but he remembered it's not just one of the other Tanurim who argues as Rebbe Yezer, where there you could say it's one against one, and I'm entitled to pass in like Rebbe Yezer to begin with. It's rather he remembered that Rabbin Kligiale, that many Chachamim argue with Rebbe Yezer, then Amahu Kedai Rebbe Yezer listen to Chol B'Shas HaTzach. Then he says, okay, but you know what? Rebbe Yezer is worthy enough to rely on B'Shas HaTzach, even though he's a Yachid, even though many Chachamim disagree, but because the halacha has not yet, because we haven't yet sat down, formally passed in, then we're allowed to accept the yes. Okay. So now that we understand the situation, if you say that the issue of Meslech also applies to Truma, not just to Kochim, okay, Hainu Dahabori, Truma, be made Rebbe. Okay, in Rebbe's time, Truma still existed, because you still have Jewish farmers in Eretz Yisrael who were taking Truma and Meiser from their crops, and the Truma was being given to Kohenim, and Kohenim were eating it. So therefore, okay, then it makes sense. If you say the question is whether the truma is tummy or not, then we understand what was going on. Eli, Amit, Kodesh, but if you're saying we're talking about Kodesh, Kodesh in Rebbe Mihavoy, was there still Kodshim already in Rebbe's time? Rebbe lived over 100 years after the Korban, the Mikdash was destroyed, there's no more Kodshim. So the scenario we're talking about is that there was an actual real issue over here. It's not just a hypothetical question in Halacha. It was an actual real issue. Is there going to be food over here that's going to have to be set aside and not... So evidently it had to have been Truma, not Kodshim. How does that fit with what Rav Huna is saying, that this whole concept applies only to Kodshim? The answer is it could. Kidr Ula. The answer is we could say like what Ula says. So Omar Ula. One time. Ula is going to explain to us how it was possible to have Kodshim in the time of Rebbe. The Omar Ula Chavraya Matkan V'Galila. Ula says that even in his time, the Chaverim, the Talmud Chachamim, are preparing wine and oil in the Galil under conditions of Tahara. Meaning, in other words, what's going on? It's not long after, it's relatively speaking, it's not that long after the Beit Hamikdash had been destroyed. It's within a couple hundred years after it. They still had Parav Dolam. So they were still able to become Tahor from Tumas Nes. They still looked forward to, Halavai, we looked forward to the same kind of fervor that the Beis Mikdash is about to be rebuilt, and therefore we have to prepare wine and oil from the Sukkah in it. But they actually had that mentality. Any time I'm saying, but the fact is, Halabai, we have the same kind of mentality that we were preparing. The bottom line is, in that time, they still had the mentality, even though a couple hundred years have passed since the Korban, that, yes, there might be, the mikvah still might be built at any time, and we have to have wine and oil that are tahor and able to be used for the mesachim, and therefore they would do that. They would make sure to prepare wine and oil in the Galil under conditions of tahor. So therefore, those have the din of kodshim to that extent. But we're going to talk about further on the Omer to say it's actually kulin shenasu al taras hakodesh technically, but fine. But no, but it's effectively kodshim because they're making it for the purpose of kodshim. They're making it for the purpose of kodshim. So therefore, to that extent, it has the din of kodshim. Stop shaking your head at them. They're allowed to learn also. If you guys want to, then fine. Okay. I don't see why it's so hard to have two different groups learning in this. You never learned from a Betnetish? No. What's the difference, taping or not? I doubt your tape is even picking that up. Okay, I'll switch. I really doubt your tape is even picking that up. Whatever. Anyway, the point is, therefore, there were kodshim in the times of Rebbe. Not kodshim that were actually being offered in the Mishnah, but kodshim that are being prepared to be offered in the Mishnah. Therefore, so yes, you could say that this story involved that wine and that oil. There was a woman over there who the situation was, we literally just finished saying that there weren't actual kodshim, because the Mishnah was destroyed already 100 years, but they had wine and oil that they were preparing for purposes of kodshim if the Mishnah was rebuilt. So then we have the scenario, in other words, over here, that in a pinch they could drink that wine and oil if they needed to. Right. And like this, you had a woman who was a situation where Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, whether Gaia Shaita or whether Mesles, was working preparing that wine and oil. So now you have rest. So therefore you could say that they were kodshim. So it would still fit with what Ravona said. Okay. Fine. So therefore, Hochanami Bnei Rebbe, so the same thing. In Rebbe's times, you have the same thing. It's even in Ula's times, which is after that, you still have this. And certainly in Rebbe's time, you have that. So yes, in that sense, there could be kodshim in Rebbe's times. Okay. Toshma. Maisa b'shivchose sh'Ram Gamliel. It happened with a maidservant of Ram Gamliel. Shahoisa oifa kikrit shel truma. She was baking loaves of bread of truma. Oven ko achas v'achas madicha yod ramayim. Between making one loaf and the next, she would be washing her hands with water, obadekas, and then she would do a bedikah of herself, whether she's nidah or not.
Between
each loaf. Bach, this way, in other words, this way. If she finds at some point she's tummy, then only the last loaf that she worked with would be tummy. Well, okay. Bach reina bodko mota, not necessarily a tadekas. I mean, to a certain extent it's required. But we'll talk about that in a second. Bach reina bodko mota tmeya. Before she made the last loaf, she did a bedikah and she found that she was tummy. Well, boss v'shala at Shem Gamil. She went and asked Shem Gamil, what do we do? V'amala kolam tmeya. She says to her, well, if you checked at the end and you found that they're nida, then all of them are tummy, because mesla. Amra loy, she says to him, Rebbe, v'ale b'dikah hoysali ben kalachas v'achas. She says, but Rebbe, didn't I do a b'dikah between one and the next? Now, what's this expression that she's saying, didn't I do it? If like he's expected to know what she's doing. So one explanation, I think the Ritva says, is that indeed, he knew that she was doing that. Who gave her the idea to do it in the first place? Mestama, he told her, he being her owner, she being his maidservant. So then, Mestama, he told her. So in that case, he knew that she's doing it. Different achronim talk about the possibilities over here. Was it maybe that it wasn't required, but she was doing it anyway? If that's the case, if it wasn't actually strictly required of the halacha, do those even count as valid bedikas? Or are we concerned that maybe, since it's not actually required of the halacha, since it's only like her personal formula, maybe she's not doing the bedikah as carefully as we said the other day. Maybe she's not sticking it into every question. So that's why, according to that explanation, she's saying, didn't I do a bedikah? Meaning, in other words, it's true of the halacha I wasn't required to, but I did do one. Shouldn't that count? And Rabbi Gamliel tells her, and Cain he may have called to her. Okay, then in that case, only the last one you worked with is Tomei, all the rest of them are Tomei. Fine, you're ridiculous, you can't. Okay, Katani Mias Kikris Shal Truma. Now, be that as it may, we're mentioning that there were loaves of Truma. Well, of course, Mias means it anyway. So then, according to Rabbona, the whole story shouldn't have begun in the first place, because even if we're worried about mass less, it doesn't apply to Truma. The answer is my Truma, Truma Slach Me Toda. The answer is Truma, but here does not mean regular Truma, the 2% of the crops. Rather, it means the Truma, the one out of every 10 types of loaves of bread that are brought together with a carbon Toda, which we learned about in the Sefer Menachem, which are Kodshim. Okay. Well then, in that case, what do you mean? Truma slach metoda b'afia, my boya. What's she doing? What's she doing? What do you mean? Truma slach metoda is not just baked by itself. You bake all 40 loaves together. There's no truma yet that's given to the kohen. Only later on, after it's baked, only then do they become lach metoda, as we learned in Menachos, only when the korban is shechted. So then, in that case, so what's the difference? The answer is that for Shimon Billy Shaihu. We can answer that the Truma Slach Metoda was separated while it was still dough. The Chihad Amr of Tuvi Barav Tina. As in fact, we find that Tuvi Barav Tina says, Lach Metoda Shafon Dalat Chalas. If you bake the Lach Metoda, like this Lach Metoda is four types of bread. Each of these three, we learned in an office, three of them are different types of masa, 10 of them are chometz, well, one of them is chometz, and you have 10 loaves of each. But Rav Tuvi Baruch Tina is saying that if you didn't bake them as 10 loaves of chometz, and 10 loaves of rikikin, and 10 loaves or whatever, if you baked each type as one big loaf, then you're also Yosef. So therefore, now when we discuss this in Menachos, we ask on that, what do you mean? Don't you need 40? The answer is the mitzvah. The ideal way of doing the mitzvah is to have 40, but if you made them instead of 40 smaller loaves, if you made them as 10 big loaves, you'd also be yosef.
Really?
Well,
we said, I think I asked you that question.
Yeah, no, we talked about that. No, I never said that. No, the Gemara over there said that, yeah. But the question is, but don't you have the issue that you need to take off one out of every 10 as truma and give it to the kohen? So you'll say, what's the problem? You cut off a piece from each one and you give it to the kohen. Doesn't work. Echad Amar Achmona, because the pasuk says you have to give one loaf of each of the four types to the kohen, meaning shaloy yotzal krusa. It has to be dafka one whole loaf that you give him, not a piece. Ve'amrinan, and so we answer on that. Dafu shinu b'mishayu. What you did is you designated them while they were still dough. In other words, here's the deal. In other words, we learned in Menachos that again you have three types of matzah. And you have one type of chometz, and each one of three types of masa and one type of chometz loaves, and each of them we said are supposed to be 10 loaves. We talked about the actual amounts over there. We had a whole discussion about the different sizes of measurements and all, whatever. The point is that you're supposed to have, let's say, a certain amount of dough that is used for the chometz ones, and then you have an equal amount of dough that's used for the masa ones. So it comes out the chometz loaves are three times larger. We learned about that there. So what it is like this. Suppose that we said over there that the amount of dough that you need for the chometz loaves is, if I remember correctly, 30 kabs. I think it was 30 kabs. So let's say, for example, okay, so that means you're going to take one loaf of 3 kabs and give it to the kohen, and then the other 9 loaves, each of which are 3 kabs, the owner is going to keep. Instead, what you could do is when you're making the dough for the chometz ones, let's say, you take 27 kav of chometz dough and make one big loaf out of it. You take the other three and make one smaller loaf out of it, all chometz, and that one is designated as being for the kohen. Well, since it's pre-designated as being for the kohen, then it has a din of truma. So that could be the exact scenario over here. It was designated while it was still dough, and now the shifcha was baking that dough, and then you had this issue over here with the possible mess. Okay, fine. So that could still work with what Rav Huna is saying, that this whole concept of messless only applies to kosher. By the way, Tosfos points out an interesting point over here. Which Rav Gamliel are we talking about? Rav Gamliel, unspecified in the Gemara, means Rav Gamliel the Yavna. But the problem is that he became Nasi only after the Churban. After the Churban, they're not still making Lach Mitzvah. So therefore, Tosfos says, on the face of it, it has to be Rav Gamliel Hazakin. On the face of it, it has to be Rav Gamliel Hazakin, who lived while the Beis Mikdash was still standing. The difficulty with that is that usually when it says Rav Gamliel, it usually means Rav Gamliel the Yavna. If it meant Rav Gamliel Hazakin, it should have said so. I did once see somebody came up with a notion. We know that, we know famously that when Ben Kuziva, who history knows as Bar Kokhba, when he started defeating the Romans, and for a while he was able to reconquer Yerushalayim, there is a notion that he actually started the process of building the third base of Mikdash, and that and so one, there is an explanation that some people have that maybe that maybe Rabbi Gamliel was still alive at that time, and maybe the story refers to that. Maybe people are starting to prepare Lach Mitoda for a Korban Toda that they're going to bring when the Beth Mikdash is finished. The theory. Fine. Toshrak. Okay, so even though the Braitha mentioned Truma, not necessarily was it actual Truma, it may have been Truma slash Metoda. So it could still be Kodesh. Okay, Toshma, Truma slash Metoda, the Mach Metoda that you give to the Kohen. It's Kodesh. Yeah, of course it's Kodesh, yeah. Toshma, sure. Now, if it weren't for the fact that it said Truma, by the way, we could have just said it means that any of the Lachmei Torah or 40 of the Lachmei Torah are Kodshim. But because it mentioned the word Truma, therefore that forces us to say that we're talking about one that was supposed to be designated for the Kohen. Okay.
Out of the 40,
you're supposed to have four that are given to the Kohen. But again, what we're saying is you're able to take the dough that's to be used for each of the 10 loaves of each type. You're able to make it as 9 and 1. You're able to make one big loaf of 9 and a separate loaf of 1, and that one will be given to the Kohen. Okay. Toshma, Shuv Maisa B'Shivchosh HaRam Gamliel. It happened another time with a maidservant of Ram Gamliel, maybe the same one, maybe a different one, as we'll see. Shaisa Gofa Chobis Shoryayin. She was sealing up barrels of wine. Again, after she sealed each barrel, she would wash her hands and do a bedikah of herself for the same reason, to make sure that she's not tamei. The last one she did, she checked afterwards and found that she's tamei. She came out and asked Ram Gamliel what to do. And again, Ram Gamliel said they're all tamei. Again, she uses the same expression, but I did a bedikah between each one. Again, either meaning you know that I did a bedikah, so therefore that should count, or maybe you didn't know that I did a bedikah. It was my own personal thing, but still you should know it was a proper bedikah. And he says, okay, in that case, only the last one is Tomei, and all of them are Tahir. So, Iam, now here, it doesn't, before, same thing, he said in that case, before he said all of them are going to be Tomei, now just clarify the name. Okay, now we have two cases over here, one involving Truma, which we said means Truma flat Metoda, and the other one involving wine. Now wine could be Truma, or it could be Kodshim, it didn't specify. So let's consider. If you're going to say that one time it involved kodshim and another time it involved truma, then that explains why she had to ask again. If she knew already from the first time that every time she does the bedikah, then only the last one's a problem, so why does she need to ask the second time? So if you say that the previous time it was kodshim, it was truma slach metoda, and this time it was truma, then fine, she has to ask, because maybe the dinim are different. Eli, Amit, Ivy by Ivy to Kurdish, but if you're going to say both of them involve Kodshim, which is what Rav Huna would have to say, because according to Rav Huna, the whole concept of mass less doesn't apply to Truma. Lama Lala Medu of the Shiloh. What does she have to ask? What does she have to ask again? Once the first thing happens, then she already knows what the din is. The answer is Maisa Shoy, Vishesh Bakakaya. Very simple. You can say there's two different maid servants. So each one had a situation like this. Okay. Fine.
He had 2 minutes.
He may have had many maidservants. He was a Nazi. He was the leader of the whole Jewish people. He may well have had many maidservants. I don't know. Okay. So far, no proof one way or the other. We have Rav Huna telling us that it applies only to Kodshim. We haven't found any way to schlug that. Okay. Now, Lishna Achrina, but now comes another Loshen in this whole discussion. Lishna Achrina Amrila, they say another version of this, that Omer Rav Huna, Me'es La'es Shemanidim, Mitama Bein La'Kodesh or Bein La'Truma. Exactly the opposite of the first Loshen. The first Loshen was, he says, that Me'es La'es only applies to being Mitama Kodshim, not to Truma. The second version is saying it applies both to Kodshim and to Truma. Mimai, how do we know that? Midloy Katoni, Lagavi Milas. Precisely because we said yesterday, the first question we asked is, if we say that it's only by Kodshim, not by Truma, then it should have been listed in the Mishnayos and Chagiga among the Milas, among the various things where we find that Kodshim have more stringent dinin than Truma. So we gave a reason that not, because Gerard is a Truma or not, but, it was a weak terrace. Over here, according to the second Lashon, he's saying flat out, the very fact that it's not listed as a Mila implies that there's no difference. Otherwise, it should have been listed. Which is correct. Amalei Rav Nachman, v'hotoni tana l'kodesh avaloi l'truma. But don't we have a braita that says that it only applies to kodeshim, not to truma? How does that fit? The answer is kibla minei Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak accepted this as a valid question, and he explained, you should know what the braita means. It doesn't mean actual kodeshim and actual truma. It means b'cholin shenas l'altaris kodesh, v'le b'cholin shenas l'altaris truma. When it comes to actual kodshim or actual truma, maslas applies either way. But you have, there can be cholin food that is prepared according to the standards of truma or cholin. Well, even during, no, even before the cholin, you can have sometimes. You have, for example, people who are regularly eating truma or people who are regularly eating kodshim, they might be careful to prepare even their cholin according to those standards in order that when they have truma or kodshim to prepare, they don't get mixed up. So now, so you have cholin that are prepared according to the standards of kodshim, and you have cholin that are prepared according to the standards of truma. So the braisa is making a distinction between those. Ne'eslas shebenida will affect cholin shenasu al paras hakodesh, but they won't affect cholin shenasu al paras truma. But when it comes to actual kodesh or actual truma, it'll affect both of them. So that explains the braisa, and it still fits with the fact that it's not mentioned among the milas. So now that we have that answer, by the way, now we don't have to be doichik all the previous cases. When we have the story with Rebbe saying to Gaihu Rebbe Eliezer, listen to Chola B'Shat HaBakas, now we don't have to say anymore that it was talking about the special wine and oil that they were preparing looking forward to the Bais Hamikdash. Now it could be plain old truma. The same thing in the two stories with Rebbe Gamliel's maidservant. It could have been. Because we're saying that it does apply to truma. Unlike in the first lashon where it doesn't apply to truma, now we're saying the din of masles does apply to truma. It just doesn't apply to chulin shenasu al taras truma.
The difference between truma and chulin shenasu al taras truma.
Truma is actual truma, the actual 2% that you took off that you get to the claim. Chulin shenasu al taras truma is plain old food that you're preparing according to the standards of tara that are required for truma. If you remember in Cholin, we had a long, complex sugya about to what extent does such food have the dinim of truma, to what extent does it not, does it become a shlishi, for example, et cetera. We had a very complex discussion about that. But yeah, so now we can say very simple. The case with Rebbe, in fact, involved actual truma. We don't have to say that it was the special wine and oil that they were preparing as kodshim in advance. The same thing in the two cases of Gamliel's maidservant. We don't have to say that they were truma slach metoida, that they were baking one loaf separately. They were truma. They were plain old truma. And plain old truma, yes, maslas would apply. When maslas applies to a nida, it would affect that as well.
Plain truma.
To regular truma.
So the two cases of Rabbi Gamliel
were involved real truma, and therefore there was a question.
And so
all these cases involved real truma. There were none of them that had to necessarily involve kodshim. Some of them could have, but they didn't have to. Now that we're saying the second motion, the halacha is like the second motion. So therefore, maslas does apply to both truma and cholin. It just doesn't apply to cholin shenasu al paras truma. Okay. New discussion related to what to the previous one. Tnan Hossam, we learn a Mishnah in the Sech Bechala. Nerdad la Sofik Tuma ad shala Gyurgala. Suppose a woman, or any person, usually it's a woman, is preparing dough. Now, at what point does dough become chayiv and challah? It becomes chayiv and challah once you've kneaded it. That's called Gyurgal. Once you've kneaded, once the flour and water are mixed together, then it becomes chayiv and challah.
Different stages of dough.
We didn't, okay, yeah, I mean, so one of the stages is Gyurgal. Gilgul is what makes it chayiv and challah.
Right.
So, nerdal la sofik truma. Suppose that you have a case of sofik truma in the dough. You have, let's say, for example, there was a sheriff nearby. You don't know if it touched the dough. Adshala gilgula, if that happened before she had kneaded the dough, no problem, tasa b'truma. She can continue making the dough even if she's tameh or even other people who are tameh can get involved in making it. We don't worry about the fact that even if the dough wasn't tameh before, it's going to be tameh now because it's okay. That we haven't yet reached the point of it being chayiv and challah. As the Gemara is going to say in a second, at this point it's still considered cholin because you haven't yet taken the challah out of it. But that's okay. You're allowed to make cholin tum. Misha gilgala, if the suffix truma happened after she had kneaded it, tasa b'tara, then she has to be careful to finish that dough in a state of tasa.
How much during the stage of gilgala?
Once you have a shiur challah of it is needed. Once you have five kavim of it are needed. then at that point, now you already have potential challah in that dough, because now already it became chayavim challah. Therefore, she has to be careful to finish it b'tamei. Okay. The reason is, let's explain, actually, Gilgal Atasa B'Truma, the reason why, if the Suffolk Truma came about before she needed it, the reason why she's allowed to continue in Truma is because Cholin, you know, because after all, at that point, the dough is Cholin. There's no, it's not yet Chayiv and Chala.
Gilgal transits
from not Chayiv and Chala to Chayiv. No, from not Chayiv and Chala to Chayiv and Chala. Well, yeah, okay.
Considered Truma.
Well, it's not, the whole thing is considered Truma, only the Chala is, but yeah, okay. So therefore, so umutur digrim truma lecholim shabarat Yisrael. This Mishnah holds, which is actually a machlokas in some places in the Gemara, but the halacha is that you are allowed to cause cholin in Eretz Yisrael to become tamei. So therefore, we're not worried that even if now, let's say, so now let's say she becomes tamei, she's still allowed to continue working with this dough. But Mishir Gilgal of Tasa Batara, we said once she needed the dough, once it became Chayav and Chala, then she's required to finish the processing of it Batara. The reason is Cholin Atvulim L'Chala to Chala Domu, because once it's Cholin that is required to have Chala taken out of it, that is Tevel relative to the Dinim of Chala, then Kachala Domu, then that dough has already the Din of Chala, but also Ligrim Truma L'Chala, and you're not allowed to cause Chala to become Tomei, because Chala is like Truma and it has to be kept Tomei. So that's the reason.
When is it called truma, exactly? What's exactly the time when it's called truma?
Challah is called truma. Once the dough is chayav in challah, once the dough is chayav in challah, namely once it's been kneaded, then it's considered it has challah in it. Therefore, it contains truma in it. Therefore, you're not allowed to be. Therefore, you're not allowed to be mitamei. Right. Okay, tana. So we learn in a braisa. V'chalosa tluya. Now, let's say in the case where we say that she has to finish the dough b'tamei. We said there was a suffix tumma that came about after the dough was kneaded. So again, let's say, for example, there was a sheriff nearby and you're not sure whether maybe a sheriff isn't a good example because then double shame by Dafli Shaw. So let's say, for example, a person who was tummy walked in and we're not sure if they touched the dough or not. That's double shesh by Dafli Shaw. So then if it's an Rishos Yachid, we said then, okay, well, dog is not tummy. No living creature is coming. Okay, anyway, the point is, suppose you... Yeah, okay, but there's a dog and there's a sheriff. I don't understand what you're getting. Okay, the point is, in the scenario where, let's say, after she needed the dough, there came to be a suffix trauma, and would say, nevertheless, she's still required to finish processing the dough b'tara because now it's already chayiv and challah. Nevertheless, that challah can't be given to the kohen to eat for sure because maybe the dough did become tameh after all. Therefore, it's tluya. Therefore, that challah is in a suspended state, like oichlin v'lo yistirchin. So you can't eat it and you can't burn it. The eiza safek amru. What type of suffix are we talking about that came about that made it a suffix challah? So now let's talk about what was the actual scenario that made it, that created the suffix. Abaya and Rava, Abaya and Rava both say, yeah, we have to explain. Shaloi toima b'hoichachos shenimu. Don't think that we're talking about a case of hoichachos, that a suffix tuma where it's clear that there was definitely tuma there. And the question is just whether the tuma actually involved the dough or not. For example, you have the classic case involving two paths. You have two paths where one of them is known to be tamei and one of them is known to be tahor. We know which one is which, let's say. But now you have, let's say, a person walked on one of those paths. He doesn't remember which one. So now he's suffix tamei. We've learned about this scenario a number of times before. Then he walks on the second path, then he's for sure tummy, because one way or the other he became tummy. But the point is, even if he went only on the one path and he has a suffix, which one? So now that kind of suffix, you don't even need a suffix like that where there definitely exists tuma, and the question is whether he actually became tuma from it. You don't need to say that would be dehasim cholin greater nami mitamu. Such a thing would affect even plain old cholin. That's not even a question of whether there's tuma here or not. So we have to be talking about a kind of suffix where if it was cholin, it wouldn't matter, but only because it's tuma, only because this dough is now subject to challah, which is a type of tuma. Only therefore does it matter. And what is that elevenisha? So Abaya and Rava explain what they mean is, what it means is, that what it means is, for example, a case of a person who possibly leaned on somebody. Namely like this, Titznan. We learn in a Mishnah in Zavin. Now we have like this. We've learned before about Tumas Midras of a Zav. We've learned before that if a Zav sits or leans or what have you on something which is meant to be sat or leaned on or whatever, then it becomes tough. There's also a din that if a person lifts up a Zav with their weight, then they become Tomei. And also, if the Zav lifts them up, then they become Tomei. That's Tumas Hesed, which we talked about yesterday. So there's different degrees of Tumah in both cases, but still. So you have like this. So any time you have a situation where where a Zav may have leaned on somebody or somebody may have leaned on the Zav, then you have a possibility of Tumah. So Titznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Zavim, Zav v'Tohar shayu pokin min ha-chamor ha-toinin. Suppose you have a Zav and a Tohar person who are together taking a load off a donkey, or together are loading up stuff onto a donkey. Bizman shemason kavod, if it's a heavy load, tomei, then the Tohar person is tomei, because it's a heavy load, either the Zav may have leaned on the Tohar person, and therefore the Tohar person was lifting him up, with mesit him, which makes him tomei, or the Tohar was niset. So either way, the Tohar person is going to be tomei, if it's a heavy load. Mason kal Tohar, but if it was a light, if it was a light burden, then he's Tohar, because then not necessarily, it doesn't involve one person leaning on the other one. If it's heavy, then it's very likely that one of them leans on the other in the course of putting it on the donkey or taking it off. But if it's light, then it's less likely it's very unlikely that was necessary. V'chulon tahurin l'vnei ha-knesses. All of these, though, are Tohar for Bnei HaKnesses. Bnei HaKnesses literally means like regular people in the shul, meaning, in other words, even people who are careful about eating chul and betara don't have to worry about that kind of tumah, because it's not a real heset. Because real heset would involve, let's say, for example, you're moving the zav completely from point A to point B, or he's moving you completely from point A to point B. Here it's not. At most you have, you're leaning a little bit against him, or he's leaning a little bit against you. He's pushing you maybe a little bit this way or that way. That's not a real heset. So therefore, it is tohu for Bnei HaKnesses. For even for people who are eating chol and betara, it's only a problem for people who are actually eating truma or kaji. Anyway, that's Rashi explains that the kulon means even if it was a heavy load, where it's likely that one of them leaned on the other one. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, if it was a heavy load, then for sure they'd be tummy for kulon, because it's pretty much inevitable that one of them is going to move the other one. What we mean is mason kal, that the Bnei HaKnesses will consider it tohu, but people who are actually eating truma and kodshim would have to hold themselves to a higher standard and consider themselves tummy even in that case. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Abaya and Rav are saying, Utmei in the Truma, and then the Mishnah finishes off, Utmei in the Truma, but for people who actually eat Truma, such a case will make them Truma, will make them Tomei, the Midra Bonin, because of the Sophic.
They unloaded from a...
So let's say you have a Zav and a regular person together unloading from a donkey. So what the Mishnah is saying is, so again, we have a slight difference between Rashi and Tosfos, but if it's a heavy load, then for sure, then it's almost inevitable that one of them leaned a little bit of his weight on the other one, therefore he made him Tomei, because either
there's... You have to put some weight on someone else to make him Tomei.
Yeah, well,
by touching him, it's not enough.
Touching him will make him as a rishon l'truma, but not more than that.
Leaning is a more
severe trauma. But
so how much more?
Well, he still just has to go to the mikveh. But the point is, not actually in both cases it's too much erev. In both cases, he's only tamei till he goes to the mikveh and has a head of shemesh. But is he mitamei? Do his clothes become tamei? Does anything else that he touches become tamei? Right. So what we're saying is that. So again, if it was a heavy load, it's highly likely that one of them leaned on the other, and actually, therefore, the Tohar became Tomei. If it was a light load, not necessarily. But, and we're saying, Tohar and Levnei HaKnesses, again, according to Rashi, it means in both cases, it is technically Tohar, and as far as Cholin, even if it's Cholin Shanaftu al Paris Truma, and it's only for people who actually eat Truma that they have to consider themselves Tomei. Levnei HaKnesses literally means people who are in shul. Regular people who are not eating truma.
Not praying.
Tosfos, again, moons a little differently, that it means that no, if the load was heavy, then for sure he's Tomei. We're talking only about if it was a light load. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, so we see, so Abaye and Rava are saying that's the kind of topic that we're talking about, where it's not even necessarily that there even was any trauma here. Because if the Zav...
Very loud topic.
Right, well, that's the point. In other words, that's what they're saying. The suffix that we're talking about that involves the dough over here does not even involve the kind of suffix of Shnei Shvilin, where you know that there's tuma on one of the paths, and the question is just did he walk on that path or not, but even a case of... But, well, no, no, if you only walked on one path, he's not on a specific ratio.
No,
it's a 50-50. That's a 50-50, but that's the point. Over here, it's even less than that. Even that is the case we're talking about. Okay. So the question is, are you telling me that chulin that have not yet had challah taken out of them are considered like challah, and even such a minor suffix is enough to make them tummy, is enough to make them tummy? Because that's what we're saying. We're saying that even in that case, we're saying that the dough has to be finished for tada to be on the safe side, but the challah that you take from that dough is still tluya. You can't eat it.
The expression chulin lachala.
Tvulin, the Russian devil.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Tevulin, mechala, means tevel relative to chala. That chala has not yet been taken from it, therefore it's tevel relative to chala. So are you saying that has the din of chala as far as the din of tumah v'tahara? Well, Tanya, well, Tanan, actually, it's a Mishnah. Isha she tevul as yoyim, a woman who was a tevul yoyim, so she tevuled in the mikveh that day, but she hadn't yet had a head of shemesh. So what can she do if she wants to make dough and keep it to her? Losha as isha. She can knead dough. That's no problem because she has the din of a sheni latumah. The dough itself is chulin, so it only
before shkia.
She didn't go to the she went to the mikvah before shkia, before tefek chavim actually. So now she can prepare dough. No problem. The dough won't become tameh because she's a sheni, and chulin can't become a shlishi. The koitza hemen chalosa. Then what she does is she separates out chala. She separates out a piece of challah. She doesn't yet designate it as challah, because once she designates it as challah, it's going to have the din of truma, and then it's going to be able to become tummy. So what she does is, so first she separates a piece. She places that chunk of dough that's going to be challah. She places it in a kfisha, which is a kfisha, which is like a very shallow basket, or anchusa, which is something Rashi describes that anchota is something like flat boards. So whatever, something that doesn't have a kli kibble, something that is not metabol truma. Now the reason is it's not because she could be metame the kevi, because she's only a sheni latruma. She can't be metame a kevi. The reason is we want a heker. We want her to put it someplace unusual so that she will remember not to touch it once she designates it as chala. Because if she does, she's gonna make a tummy. Then what she does is she takes that
food, but she cannot metame a kevi.
Right, but even as far as food, because she's a sheni, she can only be metame truma or kodshim.
Right.
So once she designates this piece as chala, it's going to be truma, and then she'd be able to be metame. But as long as she didn't actually designate it yet, it's still considered chulin. So she can separate it. She can put it into a shallow basket or a flat board or something.
Right.
Then she holds it close to the keli that has the main batch of dough, because you're supposed to take challah min hamukaf from what's adjacent. You're not supposed to have, for example, that your challah is here and your rest of your dough is here, let's say. They're supposed to be adjacent. Tosfos actually discusses, gets into a bit of a detail about it. Is it enough for them to be close to each other? Do they actually have to be touching? Do they have to be maybe in the same container, et cetera? Tosfos gets into a bit of a discussion about it. Anyway. The koda loshem, only then does she say this piece that I previously designated is challah, and the reason why that works with Neshu Shlishi, because the dough up until that point, if she would touch it, would become a shlishi. No problem. A shlishi tahor b'cholim. A shlishi is tahor when it comes to cholim. Now comes the question, the amat cholim atzvulim challah kachallah damu, if you're telling me that dough that has not yet had challah taken from it is considered light challah, well, that's exactly what this dough is. She already kneaded it. It already is chayiv and challah. So therefore, according to the rule we said before, it should be considered as if it was challah already. Ha-tami sinu. Then you have a problem. Once then she's made it tameh, because it's going to have challah taken out of it. So therefore, she was already metameh, that potential challah. Amar Abaye answers like this. Kol shavadai metameh cholin, when you have a case where you have, there's no suffix, something that would definitely be metameh cholin, for example, somebody who lifts up a zav or somebody who's being lifted up by a zav, where then he for sure becomes tameh. So that, and he's metameh even cholin, because he becomes an avatomer, or actually I think he becomes a rishon, but whatever, he can be metameh cholin, whatever it is. In that case, gazru al feikoi mishum tcholin atzvul machala. Then what we say is, if you have a suffix involving such a situation, for example, the case of the two people who are unloading the donkey, where the zav may have accidentally lifted him up, or vice versa, with his body weight, then we say the suffix like that is metame cholin that are tevil as far as chala. So in other words, even though this is cholin, because it has chala, because it has potential chala in it, therefore, to that extent, we consider it like chala, and we would say the suffix is metame. Because, after all, had it been a vadai that the Zav lifted him up, for example, then for sure he would be metame cholin. But v'hai tzvul yoyim, kiven d'le metame vadai cholin, but a tzvul yoyim is only a sheni latroma. So therefore, he's not metame cholin at all. Even if we know for a fact that he's a tzvul yoyim and he touched the food, he's not going to be metame it because he's a sheni.
So kosher vadai metame means who?
Means where if we know, rishon or higher, exactly, right. So then if you have a suffix involving that, then you apply that suffix even when it's cholin atzvul machala. V'hai tzvul yoyim, but when it comes to a tzvul yoyim, who is only a sheni latroma, kiven de lemetame vadei cholin, well, no, he is by definition the sheni latroma. That's the definition, the sheni latroma. Actually, for certain purposes, we learned in cholin, for certain purposes, he's even considered a little bit like a shlishi latroma, because when it comes to kodshim, he only makes him a revi, whatever. Okay, the point is he's no higher than a sheni. Since he's anyway not metame cholin, even if we know for a fact that he's a tvur yoyim and we know that he touched it, loy gozer all the mishum cholin atzvul machala. Therefore, we're not gozer on that case when it comes to cholin atzvul machala. So that explains how, on the one hand, you can have the person who may have leaned on the zav is not allowed. If he touches the dough, then we say we have to consider that chala tvur. We can't, the kohen can't eat it, but he can't burn it either. And yet, on the other hand, we're saying the woman, the tzvul yoyim, is able to separate out a piece of dough and only designate it as challah after she's finished touching it, because she's a tzvul yoyim, which is only a sheni l'troma anyway, whereas the case of the person who may have leaned on the zav, or the zav may have leaned on him, is a rishon or higher.
So in the case of the person who leans, who's a rishon, then he would make it tummy.
That's what we're saying. So therefore, even when it's cholin atzvul machala, even when challah has not actually been taken out of this dough yet,
He would still be,
if there's a suffix, if he himself now is in a situation of suffix, whether he became Tomei or not, whether he leaned on the Zav or not, if he touches that dough, even though it's not actual Truma yet, it's not actual Chala yet, because Chala hasn't been taken out, he's still going to be Metame yet. And that's what we said, that if he touches it after the kneading has taken place, you do have to finish it Metare. You still have to pretend as though there was no suffix Truma over here and make sure you tahor through the rest of it because of a Chala. But nevertheless, eventually that Chala is not going to be able to be eaten because of this suffix. That's the point. So that's the difference. Okay. So now comes the question, and this is why this is relevant to our Gemara over here. V'ha mes la'es sheminida. What about, though, consider the case of mes la'es in a nida, devada metamech cholin. If we knew that she was a nida at the time, she would, of course, be metamech cholin, because a nida is an avatruma. And yet we see that when there's a suffix, when there's a ma'es les, then we're not goes there on, we don't have a problem with her preparing cholin that are tevel for chala, and we know that, because we said at the end of the previous discussion, when we were discussing the whole question of whether ma'es les applies to truma or kodshim, we said kibla minerev shmol bar avitzchok. We said when the question was asked, there's a braisa that distinguishes between truma and cholin, and between truma and kodshim, in that regard, we said that Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok explained b'cholin shenasu al taras kodesh, v'lo b'cholin shenasu al taras truma, that there's a difference between cholin that were prepared according to the standards of kodshim versus cholin that were prepared according to the standards of truma. Well, here also, this dough is cholin prepared according to the standards of truma, because it hasn't yet had truma designated in it. It's only tevel as far as challah is concerned, and yet so we're saying.
So therefore, it should not be.
So we're saying, according to what Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok explained, during the me'es la'es, that dough does not become tameh, and yet it doesn't fit with the rule over here. It should, because if she was vadei nida, then it would be metameh cholin. The answer is hasam like psicha b'hu truma. The difference is that over there, we're talking about cholin shenasu al taras truma, which there's no actual truma mixed into here. eventually, there's no actual truma mixed into there. It's being prepared according to the standards of truma, but there's no actual truma in there.
If it's an actual truma,
well, halacha p'sicha b'hu truma. Over here, there is actual truma mixed into this dough, because eventually you're going to have to take off challah. And then eventually you're going to have to take off challah. Well, even though... Well, that, it's interesting you mentioned that point, because there's actually a chalukah to Rashi and Tosfos in a couple of places in Shas on the question. When we say that you're not allowed to eat tevel, and a person who eats tevel is chayav mitzvah b'dei shamayim, what is the reason for that? Is it fundamentally because mixed into this tevel is produce or dough or what have you that eventually is going to be truma or challah, or is it a separate issue? Our Gemara seems to fit better with the first possibility, that we're saying that even though the challah has not yet been designated as this, no particular chunk has yet been designated as challah, it's still considered in advance as if it was challah. Yeah,
essentially.
Right. So then, in that case, that's the difference. Chulin shenafsu al paras truma. There's no actual truma in there. There's no actual truma in there. It's just it's being prepared according to being prepared as if it was truma. But over here, there is actual truma being mixed in over there.
It has not been designated.
It's still in there. It's still in there. It's going to be designated. Yeah.
So it's considered already.
So in that sense, it's considered as if it already was, right? Okay. I'm going to see real quick if I can find about this business of the Masech to dissolve whether it was a Rishon LeTruma or not, but whatever. Let's not start. Okay. Fun. Or another answer you could say very simple. After all, the whole matter of Me'es La'es is only Zerabbanan, so therefore we can be more Mekel with it. Then we could be more Mekel with it than we would in other cases.
That changes much what we've said.
No, it doesn't really, because we're saying that usually we would say that whatever is Vade Metamech Cholin is Sophic as Metamech Cholin Shanasu Al Tarek Shurma, but only when the Vade is something that would be Daraisa, and here, the Vade over here is Daraisa, but only when the Sophic itself is something that exists on a Daraisa level, whereas over here, the Sophic itself, the whole mess left, only exists on a Darabana level. Tosfos points out the Nisha in the case of the person who may have leaned on the Zov is also only Darabana. But the difference is, when she's actually preparing the dough, there's no suffix truma yet. As opposed to, in that case, he may or may not have leaned on the zog, then he touches the dough. So it's a difference whether the suffix exists before they touched it versus after it.
Well, we still can do that once she did a bdika, it goes back.
No. Well, once she did a bdika, then that resets it, because if she saw her, then she's good. What we're saying is, when she has a re'iyah, the fact is, during the 24 hours before that, when she prepared dough, there didn't yet exist the suffix tumma. The suffix tumma only came about afterwards as a result of the re'iyah, as opposed to with the nishan, the person who may have leaned on the zav, where first he may have become tumma, and then afterwards we're saying he touched the dough.
So
that's the difference. So that's a major difference. That's another way of explaining the difference. Not another way, but in other words, within Dirabbanan, Tosfos says, you can distinguish between Dirabbanan that come about where there was the Sophic Tumah, and then the touching, versus in this case, there was the touching, the preparing of Taras, and then the Sophic Tumah. Okay. And we're trying to apply it retroactively. Okay, Mishnah says, Rabbi Yezer Omer, Arba Noshim Dayan Shaitan. There were four women where we say Dayan Shaitan, as we said, where we don't apply the Mass Last Rule. Besula. Usually Besula means a virgin, but we're going to explain later in the Mishnah that it actually means a woman who's never yet menstruated. Mu'uberes, a pregnant woman, Minika, a nursing woman, who's Kena, and an old woman. Amar Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua says, you're saying four, Anila Shamaiti Ela Besula. Actually, I only heard from my Rabbein one out of those four cases, namely the Besula. However, Aval Halacha Kerabal Yezer. But the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. There's two ways of explaining that line, by the way. Does it mean that Rabbi Yeshua himself is saying, even though I only heard one of them from my Rebbeim, I concede that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, or is it the Tana of the Mishnah saying? Rabbi Yeshua is demurring and saying, you know what, I only heard one. But the Tana of the Mishnah, when Rebbe wrote the Mishnah, or whoever it was that formulated this Mishnah, said, you know what, never mind what Rabbi Yeshua says, the fact is the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Continues the mission. Ezehi b'sula. What is the definition of b'sula for this purpose? Kol shalei rasa dam yameha anyone who's never yet had a flow of menstrual blood, even if she's married, meaning, as the Gemara is going to say, so even though she may have already had dam besulim, she already had hymenal blood, she may have even conceivably become pregnant. Why not? In those days, girls sometimes got married young. Yeah. You have to keep in mind also, by the way, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, that, you know, usually like this, we always talk about that a girl hits puberty and becomes chayav mitzvah, becomes bat mitzvah when she's 12. Technically, it's any time after 12 when she starts developing simanim. And we're going to learn later on, and in the fifth parak, technically, that can be as late as almost 20 years old. It could happen that she has delayed puberty. It could happen that she doesn't start developing simanim, that she doesn't start developing pubic hair until she's close to 20. So in that case, okay, but it still could happen, whatever. So then if she doesn't develop by then fine, then she's an Eilonis, whatever. But anyway, the point is that you could very well have, let's say, a girl of 17, 18, which even nowadays is a reasonable age to get married, but she hasn't yet hit puberty. Okay, anyway. So if she hasn't yet had menstrual blood, even if she's had other types of blood from that area, for example, blood of besulin, or for example, blood of childbirth, after first relations, when the hymen is broken, Or even if she's had blood, she's still considered a psula for this purpose, right? Afishin asurah, Moberes, what's the definition of a woman is pregnant? Mishiyavada obra. Once she's visibly pregnant. Generally speaking, in halacha, we consider that to be after 3 months. It takes 3 months for her to start showing. There's an interesting thing, actually. Ramosha Feinstein has a trova about it. Nowadays, we can know much earlier because you have pregnancy tests. Then you can say the same thing would apply at an earlier stage. And he says yes. Well, it's not so much because it doesn't go by science. No. So what he says is because, practically speaking, in those days, since there were no pregnancy tests, the only way to know when she's pregnant is when she starts showing. Right. But nowadays, since you're able to tell it earlier, and on top of that, usually once a woman becomes pregnant, it doesn't, in those times, there are Moshe rights, it seems that in those times, it was common for women to still be menstruating early in their pregnancy. Only when they reached 3 months or so, only then would it stop. As opposed to nowadays, Mishtana Rakivim, where people's bodies are somewhat different, and usually as soon as a woman becomes pregnant, her period stops. So therefore, he says that, the same din would apply. The same din would apply, therefore, of only a Dayashaita. Okay. Minika, what's the definition of a nursing woman? Adjectigmalis, but until she weans the baby. Usually they wean the baby at 2 years old, but Nosnan Bnala Minika, what happens if she herself is not nursing the baby? What if she gave it to a wet nurse? Or Gmalatu, what if she weaned it early, before 2 years? Oymes, so what if the baby, Rahman al-Aslan, died before it was weaned? What happened? Rameyer says, you go back to the usual Mesles rule. She's not nursing anymore, so therefore her periods return. So therefore the usual rule Mesles applies. The Chamem, Dayashaita, the Chamem say, even then we still say Dayashaita, for reasons that we'll end up explaining in Gemara later on. Ezu Hizkena. Okay, now let's get to the definition of the fourth one, the old woman. What's the definition of an old woman? Kolsha Avrala Shalosh Onis Samach Liziknasa. When 3 periods, meaning 3 months, three usual cycles, three expected cycles have passed close to her old age, and she hasn't seen blood, then we assume that we assume she's reached menopause. What's considered Samach Liziknasa? We'll eventually have a definition in the Gemara how we know that she's old to start counting those three times. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, again, as we said before in the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer says, or Rabbi Lazar, it says you on the side, actually, it should be, Kol Isha Shavra Le Shalosh Onis Dayashaita. It doesn't have to be Davka Shamach Leziknusa, close to her old age. Anytime during her life that she misses 3 periods, then we say Dayashaita. Rabbi Yossi says, Muberes Umnika Shavra Le Shalosh Onis Dayashaita. Rabbi Yossi says, with a pregnant woman, with a nursing woman, it's not necessarily right away. It's only when they've missed three periods. According to the Tanakhama, for example, with a pregnant woman, as soon as she starts showing, then already Dayashaita. Rabbi Yossi says we actually have to have seen that she missed three cycles. Uvameh Omer Dayashaita. Now, when do we say with all of these women Dayashaita? Only Bereir Rishoina. Only during the first flow of blood that they see after one of these four situations is established. Abba B'Shmiya. But suppose they have a second one, then already Matama Masles. Then already the Masles rule applies, because now it's obviously, when it's one time, then it's a fluke. Okay, the Chachamim don't usually make Xeris for unusual circumstances, but once it's two, it shows that her period, it shows that her periods are already are back to normal. So therefore, yeah, so therefore the 24-hour rule applies, right? Being Rasa Hushana Ma'onis, however, if the first one came about because of an onus, and we'll see in the Gemara what kind of onus we mean, Afa Shnia Daya Shaita, then the first one counts for that purpose, and even the second one is still Daya Shaita. Okay. So, we said in the Mishnah, that, again, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that there were four women that Daya Shaita, and Rabbi Yeshua says, I only heard from my Rabbein one. So now the Gemara takes up the next part of the discussion. Tanya, we learn the Braisa. Omelay Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yeshua, so what if you only heard one? Ani Ataloy Shemaita, Ani Shemaita. You didn't hear the other ones. I did hear them from my Rabbein. Ataloy Shemaita Ala Achaf, you only heard one. Vani Shemaita Harbe. I heard a lot. One of the Achronim points out, interesting. So one of the Achronim points out, I don't remember the name of the Mechardish, but he says, I think the Radal actually says this, we find a Gemara in Sukkah that mentions the great qualities of Rabbi Eliezer, that he always made sure to be in the Mismedrish as much as possible, to soak up as much Torah from his Rebbeim as he could, and also famously, the Gemara mentions in a number of places about Rabbi Eliezer that he never said any halakha that he hadn't explicitly heard from his Rebbeim. So therefore, he can use the expression on himself that I heard Harbe, I heard many, many things, and I'm able to say over many, many things that you, Rabbi Yeshua, are not. So he says, after all, it's like, you know, think of like by an analogy. If you have somebody who didn't see the new moon when it comes to Shodesh, you don't tell them go to Beis Din and say you didn't see the moon. You say to somebody who did see the moon, go and tell them you saw it. So the fact that you didn't hear, who cares? Yeah. Okay, so what actually happened? How was the halacha decided? So the Gemara says, Kol Yom of Shem Rabbi Eliezer, Hoyu Oisim Kri Yeshua. Throughout Rabbi Eliezer's life, the halacha followed Rabbi Yeshua. One second. We'll see why. La'achap Tirotei Shem Rabbi Eliezer, after Rabbi Eliezer passed away, Hechti Rabbi Yeshua at the Dabar L'Yoshnei. Then Rabbi Yeshua said that we should go back to the old way of doing things like Rabbi Eliezer, that all four women are Dayashaita. So why is that? For Rabbi Eliezer b'chayah of my time alive, why indeed did Rabbi Yeshua not want them to pass him like Rabbi Eliezer during Rabbi Eliezer's lifetime? The reason is Mishum de Rabbi Eliezer Shamusi. Because Rabbi Eliezer is Shamusi. What is Shamusi? Rashi explains that Shamusi comes from the word Shamta, which is a type of Cherem. There's three types of Cherem, Nidri, Cherem, and Shamta. Rashi explains that Shamuti is Miloshin Shamta. We know the famous story of Tanur Shalach Noi, where Rabbi Eliezer maintained his opinion against all the other Chachamim, and in the end, the Gemara says Berchuhu, which is a euphemistic way of saying that they put him in Cherem. So therefore, we don't want to paskin like him in other cases, because then people are going to end up following him in many things. In other words, the point is, once he was placed in Cherem, we no longer want that any other case where he argues with a Chum, not just Tanur Shalach Noi, any other case, we don't want to paskin like him, because then people are going to think, hey, we're paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, we might as well go like him in everything. So, and we don't want to do that. Hold on. Tosfos argues with Rashi on that, because after all, in the story over there, it says Berchuhu. It doesn't say anything about Shamta. The difference is that Shamta is a really strong kind of Cherem. It just says over there Berchuhu. It uses a nice euphemistic expression, but fine. I mean, the Berchuhu literally means they blessed him, but it's a euphemism meaning that fine. The least kind of thing that separates them from the other Chachamim is Nidui. They wouldn't have had to put him in the harshest one with the Shamta. So why would the Gemara be saying on him Shamuti? It's worse than Nidui. So therefore, Tosfos. Because different details about it. So, yeah. But anyway, the point is that one thing is, I mean, Nidri is usually a temporary thing, like only for 30 days. Shamta is meant to be a lifetime ban. Shamta is, it includes that nobody is allowed to be with Guamas again, whatever. So, anyway, Tosfos explains, therefore, so Rabbeinu Tam and Rashbam explains that the word Shamuti means that Rabbi Eliezer is a Talmud of Shammai, of Beit Shammai. So even though, as we know from Pirkei Avos, he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai himself learned by both Philo and Shammai, Rabbi Eliezer followed Beit Shammai's opinion. Therefore, we call him Shamuti. And therefore, the point is, again, we don't want to pass him like him, because then people are going to mistakenly think that we should pass him like this Shammai and other things.
But for a different reason, because he was Talmud
ben Shammai. Yeah, that's the difference. What does the word Shamuti mean? Does it mean Meloshin Shamta, or does it mean? Right. So So therefore, the Savar, so what happens is like this. Rabbi Yeshua figures like this. If we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer in one case, namely about these four women, avdin and kavasei ba'achronaita, where people are going to end up following him in other halachas as well, or mishum kvoide to Rabbi Eliezer le'matzinen machinen bohu. Now, because of the kavod of Rabbi Eliezer, fine. Even they put him in nidui, they still had great respect for him. They knew he was a tremendous talmid chacham. So therefore, because of his cupboard, we wouldn't be able to go blatantly and tell people, you're wrong, don't follow Rabbi Eliezer. It would be a busha to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, during his lifetime, says Rabbi Yeshua, I don't want to pass him. Well, after Rabbi Eliezer passed away, now already, if people start passing like Rabbi Eliezer and other things, we're able to tell them, you're wrong. The halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, and it won't infringe on Rabbi Eliezer's honor because he already passed away. Then, now Rabbi Yeshua feels that in this case, it's safe to return things to the original way that all four women are dayashayt. Okay.
What did you
do? So you have the whole story over there, Tano Shalachnoi, that you had, they were arguing about a certain type of oven, whether it was Makabal Truma, Rabbi Eliezer held no, everybody else held yes. Well, so the story continues over there that even after, so it was in Bogdan Pia. It's one of the most famous stories in Shas. So you have a Rebbe Eliezer bringing all kinds of arguments, not come on accepting them. He tried to resort to supernatural things. If the halacha is like me, then the carob tree should prove it, and the carob tree moves, and the water turns backwards, and the walls of this medrash. There's that, but then on top of that also, then he says, if the halacha is like me, then it should be proven in a shemayim, and a baskel comes and says, you should always follow Rebbe Eliezer, and Rebbe Yeshua gets up into the total of a shemayim, and still after all that, Rebbe Eliezer is sticking to his opinion. So therefore, the Chachamim felt that they too much already, you know, after I'm lapis and all that, yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, Yehuda Amashmur, halacha krebli yaza ba'ad. There's four cases, says Yehuda Amashmur, there's four cases where the halacha is a krebli yaza. Chodo damoran, one of them is this one about the four women. The idach, the second one is something later on in our Masechta. In the fourth parak of our Masechta, we're going to be talking about the various dinim that are involved when a woman gives birth. We know that when a woman gives birth, she becomes tameh from the birth itself. But you can also have a very common case that a woman for a few days before the birth is bleeding. You have pre-birth bleeding. Now, suppose that happens during the 11 days of Ziva that we were talking about yesterday. Is she a Zava, or do we say that not, because it has to do with the birth? We talked about yesterday, right, the schedule, the 7 days and then the 11. Obviously, we're talking about Ziva. No. In other words, again, you have the 7 days of Nida and the 11 days of Ziva. And conceivably, you could have. She could conceivably become Nida during late in her pregnancy, because it's uncommon, but it does happen. So it does happen. So then after the 7 days of Nida, you automatically have 11 days when potentially she's a Zava. Suppose that during three of those days in succession, she had bleeding. Is she considered a Zava for that? Let's say it could be the 8th, 9th, and 10th. It could be the 15th, 16th, and 17th. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Any 3 days during that 11-day period. Is she considered a Zava or not? So it depends, basically. It depends what happened between the bleeding and the birth. So you have, we're going to learn the details over there. We're going to learn the details over there that if you have after the bleeding, there's a period of time when the labor pains go away, and then later on she gives birth, then it means that this bleeding wasn't directly connected with the birth. Then it means she's a Zava. Then when she gives birth, it's called Yoledes Bezoi. We're going to talk about that again in the fourth paragraph. No. We're going to talk about those details, and there's a few different opinions. But for right now, let's deal with the basic concept that if she had bleeding during those 11 days, 3 days in a row, then she had at least 24 hours where the labor pains calmed down, and then she gave birth. Then we say that bleeding is considered as makes her a Zava. It's not past the 7 days. But the point is, it's not considered part of the blood of birth. The implication is, therefore, she's called Yoledes Bezoi. That's considered that she has to deal with after she gives birth, she has to deal with the Yemei Tumah V'Tahara of a woman who gave birth, plus she has to have the Yemei Tahara of a Zava. We're going to get to in the fourth paragraph when we're talking about all the deen. Yeah. Anyway, Samakasha. So we have a case where a woman is having labor pains and is bleeding. Kama tishka v'tehezava. How long does it have to be that the labor pains calm down? That she's tishka. I mean, tishka comes from a loshan like al-har nishka. It's a loshan apostate. It means like a quiet. It means quiet. In other words, the thing's quieted down. So kama tishka v'tehezava. How long does there have to be a quiet of no labor pains in order that then afterwards it turns out that that bleeding makes the zava? Me'eslef, divertably as it says, if the time of calm lasted at least 24 hours. The halacha could bottom, and the halacha is like him, so that's the second case where the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda.
The four women,
the case of this woman who had bleeding and then bleeding with labor pains, and then the labor pain stopped, and then more than 24 hours after that she gave birth.
It means 24 hours.
The idah, the third one is hazava hazava shabbat gras mnyanushin. Suppose that a zava, where they have to have 7 clean days. Suppose they did a bedikah on the first day of the clean days, umasu tahor, and they found that it was tahor. Yom shvi umasu tahor. Then the next time they checked was on the 7th day, and they found tahor. Ushara yom lebodku. They hadn't checked any of the days in between. So what happens? Rabbi Eliezer says they have a cheskas tahara. Since the beginning and the end they were tahor, we assume they were tahor the whole time. Rabbi Yeshua says only those 2 days count, the first and the seventh, the 2 days she checked, and they still need 5 more days.
So
then she still needs 5 more days that she needs to be tahor. Because Yeshua already did 2, one on the first day and one on the seventh day. Rabbi Yeshua holds they don't all have to be consecutive. And Rabbi Akiva says they have to be consecutive, therefore only the 7th day counts, because the first one is not consecutive. But Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yezer's view seems more logical than Rabbi Yeshua's, the Divir Rabbi Akiva and Divir Kolan, and Rabbi Akiva's view seems even more logical than any of them, Aval Halacha Rabbi Yezer, but the Halacha is like Rabbi Yezer, so that's the third case where the Halacha is like Rabbi Yezer. They have the case of the four women. You have the case of the woman. The halacha is therefore that it counts. And this is very negaya nowadays. The woman has her 7 days after her heftakara, and after she has her heftakara, then she has her 7 clean days before she goes to the mikra. If she only did bedikas on the first and 7th days, bedieved is good enough. Well, chila, she should be doing a bedika every day. But if she didn't, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, it does work.
She does it
only the first day and only the seventh day, and then that's good enough.
That's good enough.
Okay, and we'll continue tomorrow with the fourth case.